Our executive producer, Steve Paulson, has plenty of questions about religion and science. As a recent Templeton Cambridge Journalism Fellow in Science and Religion, Steve has immersed himself in this subject.
Getting a handle on the charged relationship between science and religion is not easy. Emotions tend to run high. Some people even go so far as saying science and religion are irreconcilable. To get a sense of the range of opinion, I talked with four major figures in the science and religion debate: Edward O. Wilson, Karen Armstrong, Richard Dawkins, and Ken Wilber. First, the great entomologist E.O. Wilson, the founder of sociobiology.
Of course, there is no reconciliation between the theory of evolution by natural selection and traditional religious view of the origin of the human mind.
Now, this is not a view that all scientists subscribe to. I mean, Stephen Jay Gould famously talked about how he considered science and religion to be two entirely separate spheres, and they really didn't have anything to do with each other.
Yeah, he threw in the towel.
He dodged the question.
He dodged the question famously. That's no answer at all. That's just evasion.
What about the sense of awe, of wonder? Certainly, that's something you hear about all the time among religious people, and you also hear about it from some scientists as well.
Well, you do. You'll hear about it from me. Awe is, that's a hard one to put exactly into words, but it certainly involves a sense of sublimity, there's another word, and a sense of the mightiness and the splendor of something greater than ourselves. The story of the origin of life on this planet, the time scale, the complexity of how it's put together, all of that together engenders in me probably even more awe than I ever felt as a devout young Southern Baptist growing up.
Let me ask you about that. You grew up religious, in a religious family.
Oh, yes. I grew up fundamentalist.
Fundamentalist?
Oh, yes. I grew up as a Southern Baptist with strict adherence to the Bible, which I read as a youngster. And I grew up in a tradition in Alabama in which I was warned by counselors that the truth was in the Bible, redemption was only in Christ, and that the world is full of satanic force. Satan himself, perhaps, is certainly his agents, who would try to make me drop my belief. But no matter how lucid they sounded, I was told, no matter how compelling, no matter how smart they were, I was to say, in effect, you know, turn from me, thou Satan. And I had that instilled in me. You have to understand how powerful religious drive, the instinct, which I consider tribalist, but probably necessary in most societies for continuing day-to-day business.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. I mean, basically, yeah, you're saying it's necessary, but it's wrong.
Well, you see, in a way, that's the dilemma of the 21st century. That's possibly the greatest philosophical question of the 21st century, is the resolution of religious faith with a growing realization of a very different nature of the material world. You could say that we evolved to accept one truth, you know, mm-hmm. the religious instinct, but then discovered another. And having discovered another, what are we to do?
That's evolutionary biologist E.O. Wilson.
Scientists, I am sure, would say that they could explain a tremendous amount, but they can't talk about meaning.
Karen Armstrong is an acclaimed historian of religion and author of A History of God and many other books.
If your child dies, or you witness a terrible natural catastrophe such as Hurricane Katrina, and you've lost, you know, you see the destruction of life and property, you want to have a scientific explanation of it. But that's not all human beings need. We are beings that fall very easily into despair because we're meaning-seeking creatures. And if things don't add up in some way, we can become crippled by our despondency.
So would you say that religion addresses those questions of meaning through the stories, through the myths?
Yes. In the pre-modern world, there were two ways of arriving at truth. Plato, for example, called them mythos and logos, myth and reason or science. And we've always needed the two. We need both of them.
Well, what do you say to those people, the scientists out there, and I'm thinking especially of the evolutionary biologists, the Darwinists, Richard mm-hmm. Dawkins would be the obvious case, who are quite angry about religion. They mm-hmm. say religion is the root of much evil in the world, that wars are fought, are fueled by religion. And they say, you know, we don't need that anymore. It's getting in our way, and we can be perfectly ethical people without religion, and it's time, in the 21st century, it's time that science replace religion?
Well, I don't think it will. We've seen, in the scientific age, we've seen a massive religious revival everywhere but Europe. And some of these people, not all by any means, but some of them seem to me to be secular fundamentalists. And they have as bigoted a view of religion as some religious fundamentalists have of secularism. If your beliefs make you compassionate, empathic with others, willing to be unselfish, then that is great. If, however, our beliefs, whether they be extremely religious or if they be radically secular, make us intolerant, unkind to other people, and blinkered, saying, I alone am right and everybody else is wrong, then this, I don't think, is a good belief. We've got too much dogmatism mm-hmm. at the moment, too much certainty. Let's not forget that in its short history, secularism has had some catastrophes.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly most of the tragedies of the 20th century were committed by secularists. Stalin, Hitler.
Saddam Hussein, another question in point, a secularist supported by us in the West initially for 10 years. Even when he gassed the Kurds, we supported him because he was a secularist. And if people are resistant to secularism in Iraq now, it's because their most recent experience of it was Saddam. So I think this kind of chauvinism that says science is right, religion is wrong, or secularism is right, religion is all bomb, this is one-sided and I think basically egotistic.
Historian of religion, Karen Armstrong.
I think that religious belief is a scientific belief in the sense that it makes claims about the universe which are essentially scientific claims.
Richard Dawkins is a biologist, author of The Selfish Gene, and probably the world's best-known atheist.
Miracles. If you believe in miracles, then that's clearly a scientific claim, and scientific methods would be used to evaluate any miracle that somebody claimed evidence for.
What about the old adage that science deals with the how questions and religion deals with the why questions?
Yes, I think that's remarkably stupid, if I may say so. What on earth is a why question? There are why questions that mean something in a Darwinian world. We say, why do birds have wings to fly with? They don't mean that, though. They mean why in a sort of deliberate, purposeful sense. Those of us who don't believe in religion, supernatural religion, would say there is no such thing as a why question in that sense. Now, the mere fact that you can frame an English sentence beginning with the word why does not mean that that English sentence deserves or should receive an answer. I could say, why are unicorns hollow? That's a perfectly good English sentence. It appears to mean something, but you don't think that it deserves an answer.
But it seems to me that the big why questions are, why are we here? And what is our purpose in life? Okay, that's a what question, but it's basically a why question.
And that's right. It is a why question, but it's not a question that deserves an answer.
Well, but I think most people would say those questions, which are central to the way most people think about their lives, I mean, those are the big existential questions, but those are also questions that are beyond science.
If you mean what is the purpose of the existence of the universe, then I'm saying that that is quite simply begging the question. If you happen to be religious, you think that's a meaningful question. Those of us who don't believe in a God will say that is as illegitimate as the question, why are unicorns hollow? It just shouldn't be put. It's not a proper question to put. It doesn't deserve an answer.
I guess I don't understand that. I mean, doesn't every person wonder about that? I mean, isn't that just sort of this core question of what are we doing in this world? Doesn't everyone struggle with that?
There are core questions. There are core questions like, How did the universe begin? Where do the laws of physics come from? Where does life come from? Why, after some period of billions of years, did life originate on this planet and then start evolving? Those are all perfectly legitimate questions to which science can give answers. If not now, then we hope in the future. There may be some very, very deep questions, perhaps even where do the laws of physics come from, that science will never answer. That is perfectly possible. I'm hopeful, as along with some physicists, that science will one day answer that question. But even if they don't, even if there are some supremely deep questions to which science can never answer, what on earth makes you think that religion can answer those questions?
I'm not saying that religion can answer, but I guess my point is that people still ask those questions, and as you've very articulately said, they seem to be beyond the purview of science, but aren't they still legitimate questions to ask about, even if you can't get any definitive answer?
Well, a legitimate question is where do the laws of physics come from? An illegitimate question, in my view, is what is the purpose of the laws of physics? Because what is the purpose of the laws of physics implies that there's some kind of deliberate purpose giver or purpose thinker, which begs the question we're trying to answer, which is there a God?
That's biologist and atheist Richard Dawkins.
The problem, of course, depends entirely on what you mean by science or what you mean by religion.
Ken Wilber is a leading philosopher of consciousness. His many books include The Marriage of Sense and Soul, Integrating Science and Religion.
If you don't know what you mean by science, you don't know what you mean by religion, then you really don't know what you mean by science or religion.
Well, a lot of people would say that science over the last few centuries has steadily dismantled the myths of religion, and by now it has basically replaced religion as a way of understanding the world. How do you respond to that argument?
Well, there are at a minimum two types of religion. And one is indeed a kind of a mythic dogma, a magic mythic approach. And that is certainly what most people mean by religion. It's the most prevalent. But virtually all of the great traditions themselves recognize the difference between what they would call exoteric, outer religion, and esoteric, inner religion. And the inner religion tends to be contemplative or meditative, their ways of working with the mind and disciplining the mind. And if you look at those, it's an entirely different story. Science has pretty thoroughly dismantled the mythic dogmatic religions. But in terms of the contemplative traditions, science is actually very, very sympathetic with those in terms of its actual methodology.
There's no denying that science has been extremely successful at explaining the material world and the whole Enlightenment project, rejecting the church as the dominant intellectual and moral authority. Where did the scientific worldview overreach?
Well, the mythic approaches tend to be pre-rational or pre-conventional and so on. But aspects of the contemplative approaches tend to be trans-rational. They completely accept rationality. They completely accept science as far as it goes. But they point out that there are higher or deeper modes of awareness that are in their own way scientific. And what conventional science has done is correctly work with dismantling the pre-rational myths, but incorrectly going too far and dismantling the transrational because they can't tell the difference between pre and trans.
When you talk about pre-rational myths, I mean, you're talking about most of the stories we would read in the Bible, for instance.
You bet. Or any of the world's guys. I mean, Lao Tzu was 900 years old when he was born, and according to the Hindus, the earth is resting on a serpent, which is resting on an elephant, which is resting on a turtle. Yeah, those kind of mythic dogmatic approaches are not really wrong. They're a stage of development. Now, I turned to Zen Buddhism originally because, to me, it was very scientific. You have to sit and train the mind. You have to be able to concentrate on an object for at least 5 minutes, often much more, but at least 5 minutes without losing track. The average adult American can do it for 18 seconds. The data there is called Satori. You look in your mind stream, once you've trained it, and you investigate your interior consciousness. And if you do this intensely enough, you get a profound aha experience, a profound satori, a profound awakening. And then that satori or experience is then checked with others who have done it.
But I'm guessing that most scientists would not accept that as proof of this as science. I mean, because ultimately you're left to people describing their own experiences.
Yes.
I mean, you can't measure this with any conventional scientific instruments.
You move in the realm of what's called phenomenology. And you're of the mindset that you either allow phenomenology or you don't. And this applies to anything like psychoanalysis, same stuff. same complaints are brought against that. It's not real science. It's not real. You can't prove it. Well, fine. I mean, if that's so, you can't prove any interior experience you're having. So you can't prove you love your wife. You can't prove that you're happy. You can't prove that you have an insight. You forget all of that. It's not real. And if that's the mindset you have, nobody's going to convince you otherwise.
Philosopher Ken Wilber talking with Steve Paulson. Steve also spoke with E.O. Wilson, Karen Armstrong, and Richard Dawkins.